What? I don't know. Yeah, let's see. Here, sit here. Jeff? How are you? I haven't seen you in a bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Should be interesting. Should be interesting. As everything else is in this. We're in, honey. Good Friday afternoon. Good. How are you?
Yeah, I know, right?
Good afternoon, Your Honor. Alan Rose on behalf of Ted S. Bernstein as successor, first representative of the estate of Shirley Bernstein.
Okay. And
may I approach? So a couple of things that are already in the record, Your Honor, just designed to help you. Extent we, this is an evidentiary hearing, these are our exhibits, we'll be putting in evidence.
Okay, so the matter we're hearing today is Ted Bernstein's petition to reclose the estate?
Correct. And just briefly wanted to walk you through how we got here. If you open up the book, the first two pages of the white binder I handed you, I just put together a very short chronology. It'll just take about 2 minutes.
Hold on one second. Other than Elliot Bernstein, perhaps, does anyone oppose your motion?
No, sir.
Okay, so Elliot, I'm calling Elliot because there's too many Bernsteins. Do you oppose their motion?
Yes.
Okay. Right, go ahead.
Okay. So this estate was once closed and reopened, but if you take, I'm just going to run you through very briefly how we got here. So, Shirley Bernstein signed her last will on May the 20th of 2008. And on the same day, she signed the Shirley Bernstein Trust Agreement. She died December 8th, 2010, And in February, in the ordinary course, I guess, the prior personal representative, Simon Bernstein, opened a probate proceeding. He was represented by counsel, the Tesher and Spalina firm. So they filed the will, and they filed the, and the court entered an order admitting the will, and that all took place February 10th of 2011. So we're talking about over 3 years ago already, those events. The inventory was filed, and the inventory is filed September the 9th of 2011, and the inventory is important. Because all the inventory shows is no residences and no residue of her estate. All that it showed was the tangible personal property that Simon estimated at $25,000. Now, that's an inventory that was prepared by the personal representative. It was filed in the court over 3 years ago. There's never been an objection to the inventory. But it's there's only $25,000 in tangible personal property. The real estate that Shirley resided in was already in her trust, so there, it never passed through the probate court. So about 7 or 8 months after they filed the inventory, Simon has discharged his duties. Now, I should step back. The beneficiaries under her will, other than for specific items of personal things, she could have left by a written memorandum, a piece of jewelry to somebody. Other than that, tangible personal property goes to Simon if he survives her. If he doesn't, doesn't matter anymore because Simon survived her for nearly 2 years. And anything other than tangible personal property, that would be real estate or anything else that was not the specific tangible property, would go into her trust. The only beneficiaries are Simon Bernstein and her trust. So in April of 2012, 15 months after she died or so, maybe my math may be off, some number of months after she died and 7 or 8 months after they filed the inventory, Simon decides, I've done all I can do and I'm going to file a petition for discharge. So Simon prepares a petition for discharge. This is tab 4 in our book. He signs it on April the 9th. It's also signed by his lawyer, Mr. Spalina, and that's the petition by Simon asking for discharge and indicating he's done everything that needed to be done. And Simon decided, for whatever reason, they decided to get waivers from Simon's 5 adult children. Now, I don't know if legally a waiver was required because they were no longer beneficiaries of the estate, but they wanted to obtain waivers. So the next thing that happened was they had a conference call with the family. Simon, his lawyer, and all 5 of his children had a conference call on May the 10th of 2012. And on that call, Simon advised his children that he wanted to close the estate. He was the sole beneficiary. He had done everything he needed to do, and he asked everyone to sign a waiver. The first person to sign a waiver, and it's in tab 5 of my book, was Elliot Bernstein. Elliot Bernstein signs a waiver. He emails the waiver into the lawyer, Spalina, with this email that you see at tab 5. And then he prints out the email, puts his thumbprint on it and initials. If you look at the first page of tab 5, it even has the Elliot Bernstein initial with his thumbprint. And he sends the original to the lawyers. This is in May, a few days after the meeting. In his email, in his cover email, this is the Elliot Bernstein covering email to Mr. Spalina, he acknowledges that he has attached as the waiver, which is the document, so there's no doubt that Elliot signed it. As I mentioned in the phone call, I have not seen any of the underlying estate documents or my mother's will at this point, yet I signed this document after our family call so that my father can be released of his duties as personal representative and put whatever matters that were causing him stress to rest. So Elliot sends in the document with that email. There's the other children were not as, the other children weren't as diligent as Elliot in getting in their waiver. Elliot sent his in May. Ted signed his in August 1st. Pam, I'm near the bottom of the first page. Pam signed hers August 8th. Lisa signed hers August 21st. And Simon died on September the 13th. We only had 4 of the 5 children had signed waivers. Jill's waiver comes in thereafter. And that all gets filed with the court. the petition for discharge. I realize Simon has died. I wasn't involved at this point. Simon has died. They filed the petition for discharge with the five waivers. Now,
okay, so let me just go back. Simon signed the discharge on April 9th, 2012, but he didn't file it?
Well, they had to wait for the waivers. And the reason for the waiver, and the vagaries of life, you know, the accidents that happened.
Okay, but I don't want you testifying because you shouldn't do that, what you're doing. There's case law that says a lawyer cannot tell a judge in opening statement anything that you might want me to consider as a fact. Okay, not allowed to do that. Okay. So you'd be really careful about that.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so, you know, you give me an opening statement as to what facts will be presented by someone else, but that's not what you're doing right now. So let's be careful.
Okay. Okay.
So, but you answered my question. He signed it on April 9th. And you know that because you see the signature and the date, but it didn't get filed with the court until October 24th?
Correct.
Okay. And it was filed by, it says, a state counsel. So someone filed it because he was deceased, but is that his lawyer who filed it?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
So they filed the and it's in the court file, and it's actually in the court file in this case, is the petition for discharge with five waivers, I'm sorry, with six waivers, one by Simon and one by each of the five children. And Your Honor has a rule that the waivers must be notarized. And I think that's Your Honor's policy, and we're not objecting to your policy, but as a result of that, the clerk, the ex parte clerk, put a memo in the court docket entry number 24 that rejected the unnotarized waivers. What happened next is not in dispute. Someone at the law firm redid the waivers with notaries that are improper. Those were filed, you closed the estate, and then that all came to light when there was a hearing to reopen the estate. Now, before the hearing to reopen the estate, we have them the affidavits from all the other four children who said the following two things in their affidavits, again, not in dispute, that they signed the original waivers back in when they did, and that they still consented to the waiver, and they signed new waivers. And the only person who's objecting to the closure of the estate was Elliot Bernstein. So because there was impropriety in the notarization of the second set of waivers, there was a hearing to reopen the estate. Your Honor, and I quoted the transcript, but and it's kind of important what you said, and I put in the docket entry, because we're at docket entry 42 in the case, was to reopen the estate. And at the hearing, Your Honor said that, Mr. Elliot Bernstein, I want you to understand something. Let's say you prove what seems to be easy, that Moran, that's an employee of Tesher's law firm, notarized your signature, your father's signature, other people's signatures after you signed it, and you signed it without the notary there, and they signed it afterwards. That may be a wrongdoing on her part as far as her notary republic ability, but the question is, unless someone claims and proves forgery, the document will report to be the document of the person who signs it. And then the question is, will something different happen in Shirley's estate than what was originally intended? That was your first reaction to what happened. We're now at docket entry 119. We're spending an enormous amount of time and money dealing with this estate when, based on the inventory, there's virtually nothing in this estate. Anything that would have been in this estate.
So is there an order on the reopening of the estate?
Yes, you reopened the estate and you appointed Ted S. Bernstein as the successor personal representative. That was his first involvement in this case.
Okay, and is that order in here or that's not in
here? I didn't put that order in here.
Okay, all right, but there is an order.
Yes.
Okay. We have it if you need it.
What?
You want it?
Okay, but there's no dispute. I entered that order.
Yeah.
That reopened the estate based upon what I just found out.
Yep.
Now, I represent the successor PR. This is what when he took over this estate, it had nothing in it. There's never been anything in the estate under his control. Everything that was there, Simon took, because Simon was the PR and the sole beneficiary. Yeah. So the accounting would be there was nothing there when we took over, there's nothing now, and there's never going to be anything, because we have no reason to believe there's anything ever coming into this estate. And if there was something coming into this estate, if someone located an asset and said, you know what?
So is there any activity on Shirley's estate?
There's been 80 some.
That deals what, though? That deals with some issue that would pertain to either accountings or distribution of discharge.
There's nothing actually pending. The only thing that's pending is that Mr. Elliot Bernstein uncovered this fraud that Your Honor commented on, and it's a fraud that, when you get through the end of it, it amounts to nothing.
Well,
and
so stop. I disagree with you.
No,
fraud amounts to a lie. Fraud never amounts to nothing.
No, it's a tragedy that it happened.
No, it's a fraud, and fraud in a court proceeding, in and of itself, is serious. It may not have an immediate economic effect. I mean, maybe the person didn't get away with whatever they were intending to get away with, if there was some intent in that area, but it's still a fraud upon the court. And when I read what I wrote, what I announced at the hearing to reopen the estate, there's a multitude of issues, one of which was, could the estate be closed based upon the improperly signed waivers? And I, on a motion by, I assume it was Elliot, to reopen the estate, I granted it, because everyone could see that the waivers were improperly notarized, so we relied upon improper fraudulent documents in that way. Fraudulent meaning the notary executed without the person signing their presence. That's what happened, correct?
And she forged it. She admitted forging all six signatures.
So now we have that status. So now, as we're intelligent people, we go forward and we say, well, let's separate the issue of the wrongdoing of those perpetrators, that's for one day, from the administration of the estate. So we reopen the estate, we appoint Ted as the replacement PR, correct?
Yes.
And now Ted files a petition to reclose the estate, which is AKA to discharge the PR. He wants to do what was accomplished by Simon in the past, and now he wants to do that, correct?
Correct. And I think there's
no.
But I want to.
Hold on, yeah.
Ted wasn't involved when the law firm.
What does he want to accomplish?
He wants to accomplish is to reclose the estate and be discharged, to stop spending money on this. I didn't mean to belittle the fraud. It was my point about the fraud was not that it was not serious.
So the question is, does the in the administration of Shirley's estate, is there something legally that prevents it from being closed and the PR discharged?
Absolutely not.
Okay, all right, so let me hear from Elliot.
But if I could, just one, our legal theory, just briefly.
All right, sure.
Okay. So if you put aside the fraudulently notarized waivers, then we have the original waivers. And what I would submit to the court is there's no absolute legal requirement that there be a notary on a waiver. It's a good way for the court to make certain that the document is genuine. But since there's no evidence that Elliot's signature is not genuine on his waiver.
Ted, Pam, Lisa, and Jill signed new waivers that were properly notarized, correct? That's what it says here. Signed affidavits.
They signed an affidavit saying their original waivers were valid and that they had signed them freely and voluntarily.
Okay, I got that.
Yeah, and they did sign, they signed affidavits. And the affidavits attached their original waivers and said the original waivers were valid.
Okay, I think if
you could close the estate based on Elliot's waiver that was knowingly given in May of 2012, alternatively, you could close the estate as a contested matter by saying that there's nothing for the person. Thank you.
All right, so you know where we're at.
Well, I'm a little confused, first off, because the last we talked, we were going to hear the motions to remove Ted, which deal with serious conflict issues. And I believe Ted arguing in this case where if he isn't successful with this nonsense he's trying, his family gets zero.
Wait, hold on.
They're claiming that... Okay.
In Shirley's estate...
Yep.
Okay. There's been one inventory filed, correct?
Yeah.
It says what it says.
But now we've given them assets of hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars. We've given Ted... jewelry reports that show jewelry. They're saying that Cy has all this furniture of Shirley's worth.
Who's Cy?
My father.
Okay, this is where
I'm taking discipline. You got to listen.
Shirley
right.
And Simon are husband and wife.
Right.
And Shirley dies first.
Right.
And Simon is, from a person's point of view, her beneficiary.
Of $25,000 according to this inventory, period.
The residue of her estate goes to
Elliot, Lisa, and Jill, family trusts. Name Ted and Pam are considered predeceased in that trust and their lineal descendants. So you see, if Ted doesn't argue successfully here, his family will get nothing.
Well,
so that conflict, okay.
I'm told here that under the terms of Shirley's will, Simon gets 25,000 dollars of tangible property.
Right.
That's true.
Well, yeah. He gets all of it, and it, if there was if there was a million of it, he would get
so
a million.
The will says all my personal fee goes to my husband.
Got it. Okay, and then it says
and
the residue.
The residence says whatever residence I have goes to Simon. It said that.
No, it's in the trust.
No, you're right, Your Honor. Page Article 2 says residences. I give to Simon, if he survives me, my entire interest in any real estate used by me as a permanent resident.
But those residents went into Shirley's trust.
Okay, but the point is, he just read the will. The will says, I just heard what it says.
Yeah.
I give to Simon.
Okay.
And then the residue goes to a trust, okay, correct?
Yes, so, which?
All right, so now, we keep, so is there, the way wills are written, you make, at an election, a specific request here, this was done from Shirley to Simon of her tangible property. He got it all. And then everything else, the residents went to Simon, which Mr. Burch just read that. And then everything else goes to Shirley's trust. Is that disputed? That's what the will says.
Everything goes to what? To Simon's trust?
Shirley's
trust,
yeah, sure.
Which were the me, Lisa, and Jill are the beneficiaries of.
The trust on the trust, they get whatever's left.
The trust gets the residue.
So now,
correct.
Let me see if I understand the issue. Simon gets all personal fee.
Yeah.
Simon gets the real estate. Shirley's trust gets everything else.
Well, Shirley's trust gets the real estate.
No.
Yes.
He says here that Simon gets the real estate.
Well, that might be more part of the incongruent documents that are going on here, but
the will says Simon gets any real estate I own. But at the time of her death, she didn't own any real estate because it was already in the trust.
Okay.
But
trust? It was already in Shirley's trust?
Correct.
So,
but the will is
the property at the time of Shirley's death was already in Shirley's trust.
Yes, well, for Elliot, Lisa, and Jill trusts.
In the trust.
Right.
It's in the trust called the Shirley Bernstein Trust Agreement, and that's subject to a separate case later to determine who.
Let me run the show. Okay. It sounds like everything that Shirley had that could be bequeathed under her will was covered by those three areas.
Okay. Then we gave you, and them, an insurance policy that showed $700,000 of Shirley's jewelry that was appraised right before her death. And they won't put it on a new inventory because that'll expose that those assets went missing. We also gave evidence. Okay.
So the value of the inventory going to Simon that includes the tangible personal property is $25,000. And that was prepared by who put the $25,000 into the
I think Simon did.
As the PR of Shirley's.
Well, I believe that the testimony from the hearing from Spallina said that he asked Cy, and Cy told him 25, and no accountings or anything were done.
You don't have an accounting.
Oh, I know, but no questions. No, right.
I accept this proffer. That's what happened. Simon Bernstein was asked, and he said put down $25,000.
So, I'm not saying that happened, Your Honor.
So here's my question.
I believe that document's fraudulent, too.
If Simon has a right to inherit from his wife all of her tangible personal property, and the inventory value says that that's worth, according to Simon, $25,000. Got it right so far?
Yep.
True?
Well, allegedly, according to Simon.
Well, that's what the document shows.
Well, we're questioning the document, but okay.
So is there a contention by anyone as to whether Simon is the beneficiary of whatever tangible personal property Shirley had her death?
Nope.
Okay,
according to that document.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So
So now we're showing.
You just told me.
So now we're showing millions of dollars of.
What you told me is there. Let me word it my way.
Okay.
Because I want to be able to understand what you're saying. So
okay.
I'll articulate it. You'll tell me if I'm right or wrong. You seem to be suggesting, Elliot, that there's more tangible property from a value point of view than $25,000. Is that what you're saying?
Far more.
That's one year.
Yes.
Okay. So, are you suggesting that Simon was somehow mistaken when he put in the inventory that the tangible value of the personal property was $25,000?
I'm saying I don't believe Simon did that personally because he knew of lots of assets. In fact, there's a memo that's supposed to be there dealing with all those assets.
So is there a
but there's now
authenticity challenge to the inventory signature of Simon?
Yes.
Is there? That's in the file.
Been in the court record for 3 years.
I've challenged it in my petitions that are unheard still.
You're missing the point.
Right.
This is where the rules apply.
Okay.
I'm not talking about separate freestanding petitions. In the Shirley estate, is there a challenge to the inventory based upon the lack of authenticity of Simon's signature?
Yes.
Okay. Do you have the copy?
No, but it's in my...
What do I call it, or where do I find it?
Can you find it? Right, no, I know. We didn't see that inventory. We didn't get that. That was part of the problem. We weren't given those inventories properly. But, more important, Your Honor...
Well, no, I don't want to make anything...
Okay.
More important than that, because that's where I am right now.
Okay.
So, did you file, at some point, a challenge...
To the inventory.
...on the grounds that... It is the product of forgery. It was not executed by Simon.
Yes.
Okay, and you did that in the Shirley Burstyn case.
Correct, and the Simon. Put the petition in both. Right.
All right,
and by the way, Your Honor, when you did this, we then went to, you made Ted the PR, despite all the conflicts, and we asked him to, you know, disclose, what's it called? The two documents, to give us the two things that we filed from Brandon.
Oh, interrogatories.
Interrogatories.
And a document production.
And a document production regarding certain of the things to put to challenge further that inventory.
Right.
And as a PR, he's just avoided it. Now,
hold on.
Okay.
February 10th, 2011,
Simon's
appointed.
Okay.
It's PR.
Simon? Correct. Right.
Simon's appointed PR of Shirley's estate. Okay. Inventory sealed, but I see it was filed.
Right, we never got copies.
We don't get copies because it's sealed. It's
as a beneficiary?
Well, it didn't go to you.
Right.
So,
judge gave it to us.
And then when you gave it to us, we filed a bunch of petitions challenging it, saying that we had $800,000 of jewelry that's missing off her inventory, that we have all this furniture that they're claiming passed to Simon. Well, anything that passed to Simon over $25,000, where is it? How could it be? So if the inventory is showing $25,000 and we're now showing well over $1 million of estate assets of Shirley's and they're not denying it, why wasn't it put on the inventory? Why hasn't Ted as PR adjusted the inventories?
Okay, hold on.
Okay. Oh, Your Honor, there's a docket text 82 motion that's got a petition for full accounting due to alleged theft of assets,
so
falsified inventories.
Okay, so here's what I want to be able to do. So here's where I am looking now at the file. I entered an order September 24, 2013, a little over a year ago, in this case, that was brought on Elliot's motion, emergency motion to freeze estate assets. I said, there's no emergency. However, I set a hearing for October 28, 2013, only on the estate of Shirley Bernstein.
Correct.
And I wrote the following in the order. The purpose of this hearing shall be for the court to address any alleged improprieties or defects in the form of the pleadings or other documents submitted to the court in furtherance of the closing of the estate. Okay, so after that order gets after next order looks like that I said the matter came before me on October 28th, that's the hearing I mentioned, and I wrote the following, and this is by order dated November 14, 2013. It says, the estate shall remain open pending the filing of a petition for discharge by Ted as successor of PR and any disposition thereof pursuant to probate rules and statutes. The court has determined it will take no action regarding the form of the pleadings or other documents that were submitted to the court to close the estate while Simon was PR, and I reserved jurisdiction. So I ruled that the Simon documents, okay, including the documents that maybe were challenged for authenticity, I wasn't going to deal with any longer now that Ted was appointed. Is that what I ruled?
It was before my time, but I believe that's correct.
Yeah, I'm just reading it. That's what I had the hearing. So I said, state gets open. Ted can file a de novo petition for discharge, which he's done, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And I'll rule on that, but I don't have to deal with the form of other pleadings that were done originally when the estate was closed. Especially because a lot of those documents you conceded were the product of forgeries by Moran the notary. So
size inventory as you count.
Right. But no one at that point, I don't have here a challenge. I just went through the docket. In the Shirley Bernstein case, I don't have a challenge to the authenticity.
You do, because on docket 82, January 2nd, 2014.
Okay, so now that's after this.
Okay, well, right after we got the inventory, we filed a challenge to it saying that there were missing assets. Go back to that. So we're...
Okay. We had a motion that's
going along. There's inventory.
Me.
And we've been trying to get the information for a year now.
Let me look.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so then
So it does come in 40.
Okay, now I see. Okay, I think I found what I'm looking for. Okay, so let me get the date of this. September 9, 2014, Elliot filed a motion in opposition to Kirshner representative's petition for discharge and to close the estate. So that's the pleading that he filed, correct?
He did file that.
Okay. How come that's not in your chronology of events?
And I'm challenging all... Oh, okay, sorry.
I didn't ask you that.
No, sorry, sir. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh.
Okay. So, I'm not going to take the time right now unless I have to, because it says it's 47 pages long, to read the motion, but the subject matter, which is opposition to the petition to discharge and to reclose the estate, has now been filed in September by Elliot on this matter, raising whatever he raises in the motion. So, don't I have to close the estate, dispose of that motion?
Well, I don't believe so, and for a couple reasons. Number one, first off, I go back to, he signed a waiver in 2012 of the state of where we were, and he knowingly signed a voluntary waiver.
Right, but are you suggesting that at the time that he signed that waiver, which was on May 15, 2012, that he knew of all of the shenanigans of Tesher and Spolina at that time?
Well, there had not been any shenanigans at that time.
Okay.
This is what he knew at that time. He knew he had never seen the will, he had never seen any estate documents, and he signed it anyway. But here's the more important...
All right, so you want me to rule, initially, that the waiver that Elliot signed in May of 2012 remains binding on him to prevent him from filing and having relief based upon his motion that I just mentioned, which is his motion in opposition to Ted's petition for discharge and to reclose the estate.
Yes, and
okay.
Secondly...
Hold on. Okay.
Second...
Don't stop. You're correct that the waiver done in May 15 of 2012 is dispositive of Ted's petition for discharge that Ted filed after that.
And Your Honor, Ted's not filing the petition for discharge. They're trying to use Simon's April 9th, which is when you saw that document in the September 13th hearing.
No, this is a petition to reclose.
No, but they're using size documents. Ted's not signing it.
That's not the point.
Oh, okay.
So here's where, Elliot, you're winning and you're going to hurt.
Okay.
No, but I always tell people, sometimes you can, you know, snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. You still want to do that? Discipline yourself. Not everything deserves a response. Okay, so the motion, the PR's petition to reclose the state based upon prior signed waivers and for petition for discharge and successor PR is by Ted, correct?
Yes.
Okay, that's what I thought. And so part of the basis of that petition is that Elliot's May of 2012 waiver should not allow him to oppose the petition to reclose and for discharge, true?
True, you've denied that.
Okay.
And request for accounting. And I'm requesting accounting, meaning they're saying they have all the waivers of accounting. Oh, I'm sorry.
Here's the thing, and maybe it's just because I've been getting this today. I constantly am getting interrupted, and the flow of how I need to be able to make my rulings is being disrupted. And, you know, I chastised lawyers earlier in the day for continuing to do that, to the peril of themselves, and you're right there. Okay.
Well, I'm sorry.
So, you know, as I told them, you can't continue to do that. There's no ad, because I'm not done. Okay, when I'm finished, I always give everyone a chance to speak, but you all don't let me finish. You always interrupt me, so stop doing that. Okay, so, what were you going to say, Mr. Rose? I lost
the okay. So, the other grounds for seeking to reclose the estate are, which we raised, are sort of a practicality ground, and on you asked me a question of his motion that he filed in response to our petition to discharge.
His motion is in opposition.
Correct. And I submit he lacks standing to do that for the following reason. He's not a beneficiary.
Well, stop. Why did you then... You asked that Kim was able to reclose the estate based upon prior signed waivers. And Elliot is one of those prior signed waivers, correct?
Correct.
So, are you taking a position that it wasn't necessary for Elliot or the other siblings to sign waivers? Because it's your motion that says it is, so I just want to know whether you meant what you said in your motion.
Well, I said that I didn't believe they actually needed to have waivers necessarily, but the lawyers were doing it as an abundance of caution. They were...
There's two sets of waivers, one by Elliot and two by everybody else because of the problem with the notarization.
Right.
The other four siblings signed affidavits at least recasting their waivers. Okay, so a lot of work and effort in your chart is based upon the subject of waivers. Now you're telling me that that's a waste of time because none of those children, Elliot or his four siblings, had standing to even participate. And so my question is, if that's what you're saying, why are we spending so much time on the waiver issue?
Well, they are, in Shirley's estate, they would be her heirs at law.
Okay.
So I don't know whether you require it or it was you know, a belts and suspenders, but to waive the accounting, Simon and his lawyers asked all five children to waive the accounting. What I was suggesting in the motion was the only reason that the original petition was denied was because of the notary being absent. Okay, so that's denied.
Okay.
My next point is, for Elliot wouldn't, there's two points. One, he lacks standing because he's not a beneficiary of this estate.
I understand.
And then secondarily, if he finds an asset next week, I mean, to date there's no assets. You can show me an insurance policy, it doesn't mean there's an asset there, right? So if there's no evidence that there are assets.
When you say that again.
Okay. He's saying he found an insurance policy that listed some jewelry. And he's saying, where's the jewelry?
Mean not a life insurance policy, but a jewelry waiver, a jewelry writer?
I just heard him say that earlier today. That's what he thinks.
Okay.
There's jewelry missing. What I'm saying is, if there was jewelry that he finds, if he goes out tomorrow and finds jewelry that was owned by Shirley on the day she died, it passed to Simon because he got everything. So it would be in Simon's estate. It would not be, there's nothing for him to worry about in Shirley's estate. It would be in Simon's
okay,
estate.
Let me answer this question.
And we're
so, slow down. So everyone seems to agree, hopefully this is the case, that according to Shirley, all of her tangible personal property goes to Simon. True?
True.
And you agree with that. All of it goes to Simon.
$25,000 according to the inventory.
The value of it, but
in
the will says it goes to him.
Yep.
Okay, so now the inventory that values that at $25,000, put aside whether that's accurate or not. Whatever it is to go to Simon. I mean, is to go to Simon. True?
True.
No.
Whatever it is,
says by specific memorandum on page one, whatever was supposed to go to my wife, my kids, that my mother designated.
I thought the way the will read, all of her tangible personal property goes to
that isn't specifically granted to other children or people. So there's supposed to be a written memorandum with this will that we've been trying to get.
Is there a clause in the will that's a bequest of tangible personal property?
It's a very standard will. It does say, the first part of Article 1 says, I give such items of my tangible personal property to such persons as I may designate in a separate written memorandum. Very standard thing.
Was there a memorandum?
There's not. I've never seen one, and I don't know that there's one in the not an issue. There's not one. There's no one. There is not one.
So the will, there hasn't been filed with the court a memo, correct?
Correct.
And no one's produced one.
Correct.
So what is the directive of Shirley's will about her personal property?
Everything else goes to Simon if he survives her, which he did.
Okay. Is that true under the will?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So let's get back to what I was talking about. Simon is the direct beneficiary of Shirley's personal deed. True?
Correct.
Okay, yes?
Correct.
Okay, so now, this is what I think I'm hearing, so you're going to correct me if I'm wrong. Elliot claims that Shirley died in 2010, December, and Simon dies in September of 2012. Okay, got that right. Shirley had X of personal property. Okay. The identity of the items right now I don't have to mention, but it, according to Elliot, was more than what's identified in the inventory. Okay. That would not matter if all of Shirley's property from the time that she died went to Simon and is now in Simon's estate because Simon died. So unless Simon gave it away or did something like that, whatever Shirley had goes to Simon. So let's assume Simon was still alive for right now, okay? Simon says, okay, I get all my wife's personal debt. I thought there was $25,000 in there, but my son enlightened me that it's really $750,000 worth of items, including jewelry, etc. Okay? And so, whatever it is, Simon would be entitled to those items, true?
True.
Elliot, I think, is claiming that between the time that Shirley died and the time that Simon died, or maybe since the time also that Simon died, that personalty has been diverted from Simon and his estate to Ted. Is that what your allegation is?
Nope. Ted, Pam, Lisa, and Jill.
Okay.
They've admitted they have possession of those things.
Okay. All right, so not whether it's true or not, but does Elliot make that allegation in this 47-page opposition? Is it alleged?
I assume he's alleging that.
Okay, all right. So let's back up for a second. A decedent dies and leaves to their spouse personal property that the spouse then owns. And then that spouse dies, meaning their estate then owns it if it was still in existence. Between these dates, some other family member gets a hold of those items and doesn't deliver it to the second to die's estate. Because they took it for themselves. Okay, I mean, I have this exact case, you know, a very large case where there's millions of dollars of jewelry that's allegedly taking place. So this is not unfamiliar to me, how this could happen. I'm not saying it happened here. And Elliot says the perpetrator of this is the PR. It's Ted. And so, you know, he doesn't say that?
He doesn't say it's Ted.
Yeah, no.
Ted and others.
I say Ted and others.
Ted and others. So
not as the PR in his estate, though. Mm-hmm. He's saying is, mm-hmm. See, when the stuff goes to Simon,
yeah.
Okay, everything goes out of this estate into Simon. Now Simon has it for some period of time.
Now, if it's stolen from Simon
at that point, it's an issue to be dealt with in Simon's estate.
It's stolen from Simon during Simon's lifetime.
It's an issue in Simon's estate. And we're not closing Simon's estate today. But the thing is...
But how do I identify what it is that is the starting point of Simon's estate? Oh, yeah, I'm trying to, like, block you out. How do I identify what the starting point of that is unless I can enter an order and make a ruling on what it is that Simon inherited from his wife? And then trace, if we can, what Simon did with it or whether someone else took it. And so when Simon dies, when you say, I'm asking this, that we should deal with this issue in Simon's estate, who's Simon's PR?
I'm not saying Mr. O'Connell.
Mr. O'Connell. So Mr. O'Connell is going to say, here's the inventory value of Simon's estate, and it's X. But what happens if it would be X plus if O'Connell had things in possession that Elliot says belonged to Simon, but never made it to Simon's estate because Ted and others cited it? What about that?
Okay.
If it's true.
Well, if it's true, it doesn't change what we're doing here today.
Well, okay.
Because first of all, there's nothing I can do to enlighten, there's nothing that Ted can do to enlighten the court by way of a further inventory, because all we have, Simon was in possession and control of his and his wife's life. He knew what assets they had, he knew what jewelry they had. Simon's the only one that could have accounted for that,
okay.
And he lived for some period of time.
Here's the point.
Well, but I'm trying to...
No, because here's the point. Now it comes to, I'm going to try to get you guys to get to this, in line here. Here's my view, I'll tell you what it is. To close out Shirley's estate, okay, we should have a clean close, okay? Whereby one of the things that we do when we close the estate, discharge the PR, we release the PR, the government with duties and responsibilities, and everything that has to be done under the estate is done, and that includes making sure the personal thing went where it belongs, which was to Simon. Elliot is claiming, okay, as I'm having this discussion, that didn't happen, okay? Just listen to me, this is very simple. Elliot's claiming that Ted and others diverted valuable assets that should have gone to Simon and his estate and took it for themselves. Let me finish. I know you want to speak, don't speak, okay? That is a ground to oppose the reclosing of the estate and discharging the PR, because the PR has to turn over to Simon's PR, who's O'Connell, the assets that Simon had a right to unless Simon disposed of them. And Ted alleges that that's not what happened. Elliot alleges that that's not what happens, that there were other assets that Ted and others took, so it never made it from Simon. Simon didn't have it with him when he died, not because he sold it for himself or he consumed it, but it was basically purloined from him. Okay, so here's the way this goes, and I'll hear you on this procedure. That's a claim that Elliot makes. And for me to close the estate, I have to adjudicate that claim. But that means I have to hear evidence to support that claim. Okay? And then once I have an evidentiary hearing that Elliot has the burden of proof of, okay, burden's on him to prove that, I can then rule on that. The problem is that without the opportunity to present evidence along that line, I really can't close the estate and discharge the PR, especially if the PR is one of the individuals who supposedly took money or property that belonged to Simon for himself. But it goes without saying that to allege that is one thing and to prove it's another thing. So we have a hearing. It's Elliot's burden. I'll start the hearing by saying, call your first witness, and I'll either hear testimony or see evidence, and I'll make a ruling on that. Then, depending upon what that ruling is, I'll be able to then discharge the PR. Now, if you back up for a second, Mr. Rose, it should become apparent to you that until I do that, it's tenuous to close the estate prematurely. Let me have his hearing, see if you can prove it. You seem to be pretty convinced that there is no evidence of what he's saying, correct?
Yes, sir. But just to clarify, just procedurally, I think what Elliot is saying is, after my mother died, and my father took possession of everything.
Or he never got it.
Well, I think he's saying my father, you know, whatever it was
he's
in the house.
He's entitled to it.
Right, whatever's in my house. And I think he's saying is that the other children influenced the father to give him stuff. No one's. I think that's what he's saying. And that would be something that I'm saying procedurally happens when Simon's in possession of the stuff.
Well, that's all part of the evidentiary hearing where he has to prove, look, people inherit from their spouse, and let's say they live 2 or 3 years, they can sell it, they can lose it, they can give it away. That's okay, but that's not the part that I'm interested in hearing about. I mean, if that's what happened. So, you know, if we're at that point, where Elliot's making a claim, but we're not going to leave it that way. We're going to leave it where he has to prove his case. He may, you know, I mean, Elliot raises issues, but he knows he has to put evidence together of this stuff. So that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give it. So how much time do you need, Elliot, for that evidentiary hearing?
I think we've got a few other issues. No, that hearing,
this is a hearing, a narrow
probably
hearing.
An hour or two.
Okay, what do you think?
I've never heard, all I've heard is there's an insurance policy with some jewelry. I have no idea. No one's ever given me a list of how many items they think have been taken.
Right,
so
but you know what?
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay, right. So
I think a half a day would be fine,
okay,
2 hours.
Maybe 2 hours. You're going to learn maybe only at the hearing. I mean, the fact that there's an insurance policy.
Sure.
You may say to yourself, you know what, on behalf of Ted, I'm not concerned that's evidence of anything, that it's evidence to stop the closing of the estate. He's got a burden of proof. Let him prove it. The more you oppose his ability to get that hearing and to present that evidence kind of concerns me a little bit, only because I think we need to cross that bridge. Okay.
Well, just to alleviate your concern, though, we have to have that fight somewhere. I'm just trying to figure out where we're having the fight. You know, what happened in the Shirley estate, that's fine.
You
can have
it. Because this is a Shirley estate item. You know, I'll deal with that. Depending upon the outcome of that, I'll deal with the next battle. Elliot's raised battles in a lot of different arenas, but I'm not lumping these all together because since it's his burden of proof on his challenges, he might be able to prove some things, maybe not others, but I'm not going to lump them all together. So this is your motion, and that's how I'm going to deal with it.
That's fine.
Okay, a few things. That would be premature. Right now there's ongoing investigations of Ted into the theft of the jewelry and Pam Lisa and Jill. Those are ongoing with the Sheriff's Department.
Well, okay, but here's the problem.
Okay.
I don't conduct these hearings based upon the fact that I can't have a hearing on this until you tell me that the Sheriff's Office is investigating it.
Okay.
You know what you do? You subpoena the officers who you think have evidence and have them come in and testify, and that's how I'll know whether that's really the case.
Okay. Then this petition for discharge that they're claiming was signed in April to close the estate.
Wait, hold on. April by who?
Sai.
Yeah, but now I'm not acting. I just entered CEDA.
Okay.
I entered an order to say that I'm not ruling on those matters. I'm ruling on Ted's application to close the estate.
Okay, now, because there's no waiver signed by me, I'm also requesting that we get an accounting and that Ted answer these interrogatories that we propounded on him months ago so we can get our hearing prepared for. He's refusing to even address us as PR. By the way, he hasn't even sent out letters since you appointed him a year ago to anybody.
So let me see if the interrogatories are directed to this matter. Where do I find them? Do you know where they are?
Yeah,
Cam.
Yeah, she's got them right here.
Can you pick them up from her?
It's also...
Let me just ask you this, Mr. Rose. Was, what, was there a response by Ted to these discovery requests?
Yeah, there were objections filed before my involvement.
Okay.
By prior counsel.
So had they been ruled on?
Those have not been ruled on.
Because the counsel abandoned ship on Ted.
Well, that's...
So we've asked for all this, and they just refused to give us anything.
Remember, you know, trying to do things a certain way, if there's a discovery request and there's an objection, I have to rule on the objection.
Okay.
So, So I will, because you tell me now, I didn't know this, I need to be able to rule on the objections to this discovery. I'll either sustain or overrule them, depending upon whether I think this discovery should take place with the motion that we're talking about. Okay? And that's pretty easy to think about. Go ahead, what else?
Okay. The accounting now has to take place without the waivers, and there's also been over like $100,000 or $200,000 of legal fees billed that we have no documents on in the estate of Shirley, billed to the estate of Shirley by all these attorneys.
Shirley's estate is paid?
That's so Shirley's estate's been billed for or paid or whatever. Mark Mansouri, in fact, has an open bill waiting. I don't know how you could close the estate without hearing Mansouri's bill. He's got a petition for legal fees.
Let me ask you this. In Shirley's estate, was the bank account open?
Yes, right?
I don't know.
Okay.
Oh, we don't know.
All right. Okay. So has Shirley's estate, if it's open, the estate banking account, and this is to Mr. Rose for the record, has Shirley's estate paid fees?
Shirley's estate had no money, so nothing's been paid out of Shirley's estate. The trustee of her revocable trust is liable for the debts of her estate.
Okay, so did you hear my question?
Yeah, none from the estate.
Okay, so
that I'm aware of.
Well,
so,
Your Honor.
Hold on, this isn't that hard. Okay, so, so the first hearing I'm going to have, non-evidentiary, is dealing with the objection to the interrogatories and the production request. I'll see whether I'll sustain or overrule the objections. Okay? All right.
There's another issue. We have adversary proceedings open in the Shirley estate, which I don't even know why he's bringing this when he knows that with the adversary proceedings stayed by Your Honor, how are we going to close the estate? My counter-complaints against the estate of Shirley Bernstein and Ted and all those issues.
Well, but here's the thing. Let's assume I deal with the discovery, because this is your discovery, you said, for the hearing dealing with their petition for discharge. In the petition for discharge, they've already said that it is on Ted's side there that Shirley's left, according to the inventory, $25,000 worth of personal fee that went to Simon, and everything else went to either Simon directly or to Shirley's trust. And therefore, there's nothing in the estate to administer or to claw back.
By the way,
your objection to that will raise evidence of whether that's not the case.
Okay.
So that's, but remember, to give the burden of proof that there's more in there. Because all they can say is, here's what we say is in this estate, and we want to get out and finish it and close it based upon it. People can try to get fees from there. It doesn't mean there's any money or assets to pay it with.
Well,
so
there
you have to be able to.
They want.
Determining that the estate itself is entitled to more assets.
By the way, he just told you that there's no billings of attorneys in Shirley's estate. You got Mr. Mansouri's motion for his bill to be paid. There's Tesher and Spallina got $100,000 of billing in this estate that's unaccounted for. We need accounting. Yeah.
But there's no checkbook.
There's so much fraud going on here, Your Honor, that it's mind-boggling.
So if there's no estate checking account.
Right.
Some other person or entity may have paid it, but not the estate.
They're taking the bill from the trust.
Okay.
to pay Shirley's estate. So that still has to be accounted for under Shirley's estate.
Who said that?
Oh, I would assume they're billing it to Shirley's estate.
Okay, but if they send the bill to Shirley's estate and Shirley's estate is broke and has no assets, but another entity or person says, hey, I'll pay that. If John Jones says, sure, I'll pay that bill, that's not an accounting item in Shirley's estate. Because what? John Jones's payment of that bill doesn't show up in Shirley's estate.
It's got to be a loan to Shirley's estate.
No,
it's got to come as... So
the beneficiaries have to pay for that.
Who's paying for it?
Well, then in the trust, you can deal with that issue. Why is the trust paying for that bill?
Well, we can't get a trust accounting from these guys.
All right.
Those were my points.
I have to go to investiture of Federal Judge Rosenberg. Hopefully, I can still make it. So let me look to see when I can give you some time. On the discovery issue, let me do this now if I can. Okay, I'm going to have to call you. I have to sit with Cherry. And I'm going to give you a half an hour duration on your discovery objection. I'll give you 2 hours on the hearing. We're going to take this in small steps so I can knock off some things and you folks can make some progress. Okay? The hearing will be on, after I do the discovery issue, the hearing will be on Ted's motion to reclose and discharge. And that will rise and fall, and the end of that order will be, I'll either say the state closed, Ted discharged, or not. Okay, based upon whatever evidence I get. Okay, so half an hour on discovery, 2 hours on that one, and I'll share it later.
Thank you, Your Honor.
I thought it should be on the certificate of service list, the firm that you're with. I just wanted.
Do you have your card also?
I don't have one. I'll just write it on here.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, can you just pass them?
Okay.
You want to say back, Your Honor, or you want to?
No, keep your information.
Yeah, let me write it. I'm going to put my personal.
Thank you for your time. Sorry to keep you today.
Would you like to order it this time, Mr. Rose? Okay. So this is, I think I have your.
Aaron, do you have a card?
I'm writing it for her now because I have one on me.
I'm just going to check for mine.
U.S. I'm gonna write it again.
Okay.
0 U.S. legal. Support. Now they'll give you a page, the cost from the page of stipulation.
Okay. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.